Now turn to part three. You will hear an interview in which a historian called Mark Connor and a writer called Judith Monroe are talking about the history of the Underground Railway in London. For questions 15 to 20, choose the answer A, B, C or D, which fits best according to what you hear. You now have 70 seconds to look at part three.
Today we are talking to historian Mark Connor and writer Judith Munro about the history of the London Underground Railway, otherwise known as the Tube, which celebrated its 150th anniversary recently. Mark, what prompted the construction of the world's first underground train system all those years ago?
Well, we tend to think that all modern problems were invented by us. But actually, the 19th century also had traffic problems. OK, it was all horse-drawn transport in those days, but still the streets were jammed. London is an old city which grew organically. It never was designed for heavy traffic, and so there are lots of narrow streets. Now, there was once a guy called Charles Pearson who was stuck in what we'd now call a traffic jam, and he thought of the unique solution of having a transport system that could go underground. It was a brilliant idea, but it wasn't until 30 years later that the first line was built.
So, Judith, how did they go about it as an engineering project?
The first set of underground lines were built by a method called cut and cover, which was pretty crude, because basically you cut open a big hole in the ground, preferably in an existing road rather than having to demolish a lot of houses. Though a few houses were demolished, then you put in the railway and covered it over again. That's a pretty disruptive form of engineering, and it did cause chaos in the centre of London for a couple of years. But amazingly, they were started in 1860 and completed by 1863. You wouldn't expect to finish a single metro line in that time these days.
And how was the first line received by the public when it finally opened, Mark?
Well, there was a big debate at first. Would people use it? Would they dare to go in it? What would they find down there? Would there be dog-sized rats and stinking sewers? I think people were quite brave, actually. The tunnels were pretty dark because they only had gas lighting at the time. In fact, on the day it opened, an incredible 30,000 people used the railway, and the trains were completely full. The whole thing was profitable from year one, encouraging investors to help continue developing it.
And let me ask both of you, as development continued, what effect did it have?
Oh, the effects were huge. As it grew, it provided work for thousands, both in the construction and the subsequent running of the system. And it was a great source of national pride. It's hard to overestimate its importance in the way London grew. The city actually followed the spread of the underground lines, not the other way round.
Mark?
Don't forget, London was the pioneer of this. They did it 37 years before anyone else in the world. And yes, I would say that the Underground really helped create London. The lines spread out towards what were little villages at the time and are now important areas of the city.
And Judith, what about the stations?
If anyone wants to come and experience the Underground, I'd say use that extension of the Jubilee line opened in 1999. You'll see how beautiful the stations can be. They were deliberately designed as big, cavernous places with an adventurous feel of going underground, massive escalators going everywhere, a bit like the 1920s film Metropolis, where you get the sense of being in a really huge city with lots of people going different places. A thrilling place to be. A lot of the stations on that stretch of the line are like that. They're absolutely incredible feats of engineering.
And what about mapping the railway? Wasn't that incredibly complicated?
Yes. What happened was, as more lines opened up and the existing map became more complex, a guy called Harry Beck said, "Hang on, this map doesn't have to be geographically accurate." So he made it geographically inaccurate. Just a very simple diagram, made of straight lines and 45-degree angles. I think that's one of the main ways it became something in people's heads as a system, as an icon of London. London Underground have now made more money from the map through merchandising than they have through running trains.
Now you'll hear part three again.
Today we are talking to historian Mark Connor and writer Judith Munro about the history of the London Underground Railway, otherwise known as the Tube, which celebrated its 150th anniversary recently. Mark, what prompted the construction of the world's first underground train system all those years ago?
Well, we tend to think that all modern problems were invented by us. But actually, the 19th century also had traffic problems. OK, it was all horse-drawn transport in those days, but still the streets were jammed. London is an old city which grew organically. It never was designed for heavy traffic, and so there are lots of narrow streets. Now, there was once a guy called Charles Pearson who was stuck in what we'd now call a traffic jam, and he thought of the unique solution of having a transport system that could go underground. It was a brilliant idea, but it wasn't until 30 years later that the first line was built.
So, Judith, how did they go about it as an engineering project?
The first set of underground lines were built by a method called cut and cover, which was pretty crude, because basically you cut open a big hole in the ground, preferably in an existing road rather than having to demolish a lot of houses. Though a few houses were demolished, then you put in the railway and covered it over again. That's a pretty disruptive form of engineering, and it did cause chaos in the centre of London for a couple of years. But amazingly, they were started in 1860 and completed by 1863. You wouldn't expect to finish a single metro line in that time these days.
And how was the first line received by the public when it finally opened, Mark?
Well, there was a big debate at first. Would people use it? Would they dare to go in it? What would they find down there? Would there be dog-sized rats and stinking sewers? I think people were quite brave, actually. The tunnels were pretty dark because they only had gas lighting at the time. In fact, on the day it opened, an incredible 30,000 people used the railway, and the trains were completely full. The whole thing was profitable from year one, encouraging investors to help continue developing it.
And let me ask both of you, as development continued, what effect did it have?
Oh, the effects were huge. As it grew, it provided work for thousands, both in the construction and the subsequent running of the system. And it was a great source of national pride. It's hard to overestimate its importance in the way London grew. The city actually followed the spread of the underground lines, not the other way round.
Mark?
Don't forget, London was the pioneer of this. They did it 37 years before anyone else in the world. And yes, I would say that the underground really helped create London. The lines spread out towards what were little villages at the time and are now important areas of the city.
And Judith, what about the stations?
If anyone wants to come and experience the underground, I'd say use that extension of the Jubilee line opened in 1999. You'll see how beautiful the stations can be. They were deliberately designed as big, cavernous places with an adventurous feel of going underground. Massive escalators going everywhere, a bit like the 1920s film Metropolis, where you get the sense of being in a really huge city with lots of people going different places. A thrilling place to be. A lot of the stations on that stretch of the line are like that. They're absolutely incredible feats of engineering.
And what about mapping the railway? Wasn't that incredibly complicated?
Yes. What happened was, as more lines opened up and the existing map became more complex, a guy called Harry Beck said, "Hang on, this map doesn't have to be geographically accurate." So he made it geographically inaccurate. Just a very simple diagram, made of straight lines and 45-degree angles. I think that's one of the main ways it became something in people's heads as a system, as an icon of London. London Underground have now made more money from the map through merchandising than they have through running trains.
That's the end of part 3.